Eddie, the 10-year reunion. Chapter 6. Black versus Boganskaya, et al. The evidence against Eddie, Kathy, Mark, and Paula is indisputably quite extensive if you ask Chucky. If you ask Chucky's psychiatrist, he would say Chucky is crazy, to say the least. But, nevertheless, everyone is allowed their day in court. Chucky has charged Eddie, Kathy, Mark, and Paula with trespassing and kidnapping. In his first complaint, Chucky alleges that his four adversaries entered his property with eight other people who looked just like them. Chucky's second complaint is that, approximately 6 years ago, Eddie and Mark transported him to Hawaii, therefore, in a legal sense, kidnapping him. Since there is no statute of limitation for kidnapping in their state, Chucky's attorney filed the charges with the court. Since the alleged kidnapping occurred many years ago, Chucky treads on thin ice. Years ago, the district attorney, Janet Sims, hearing of Chucky's complaint of kidnapping, refused to press charges against Eddie and Mark. Chucky's complaint was so outrageous that no sane person would believe his testimony. It's not every day the district attorney gets a case of kidnapping involving an alleged time machine. But that did not stop Chucky's attorney, Mr. William Savage, from pursuing a civil case. Mr. Savage hopes that, by proving the civil case, the door will open leading to criminal prosecution. Truth be told, Mr. Savage does not think he will win the civil case unless, of course, the jury is as crazy as Chucky. Chucky is demanding the sum of $100,000 from the defendants. Eddie and the other defendants have countersued Chucky for their attorney's fees. Eddie could easily write the check for his attorney's fees. But making Chucky pay dearly for his frivolous lawsuit will decrease the likelihood of Chucky taking legal action in the future. Defending Eddie, Kathy, Mark, and Paula are Mr. John Davies and Mr. Joseph Rice of the firm Davies and Rice, LLP. While criminal defense is not Mr. Davis nor Mr. Rice's expertise, they have taken the case purely for its entertainment value. Mr. Davies has assured Eddie that the case will be laughed out of court. Mr. Davies will make sure of that himself. Mr. Savage also suspects the case will be laughed out of court, but he has already been paid a lot of money by Chucky, and is just showing up for the trial to collect a paycheck. The day of the trial arrives. Present in the courtroom are Captain Richard Hayes, Officer Axel Braden, and a few members of the tribe who are on the official witness list. Officer Erica Bradshaw, who has had many run-ins with Chucky in the past, is also present today. Erica would not miss the chance of watching Chucky go down. Mrs. Black, who is also present, does not want to miss the chance of watching Eddie go down. Angela Meadows, who will testify as an expert witness, is seated out in the hallway, as expert witnesses are not permitted in the courtroom except to testify. At exactly 9 o'clock, the bailiff announces, "All rise." Seated at the defense table, Eddie and Kathy stand, as does Mark and Paula. Chucky, seated at the plaintiff's table, has to be prompted to stand by Mr. Savage. Officer Braden, in uniform today, also stands. Standing alongside Officer Braden is Captain Richard Hayes, Officer Kenneth Wilson, and Officer Erica Bradshaw. The bailiff proclaims, "Hear ye, hear ye." The court is now in session. Taking a seat at the bench, the judge strikes his gavel. The bailiff announces, "All may be seated." Chucky sits nervously at the plaintiff's table with his attorney, having sat in court more than once before this particular judge. A few mandatory announcements are made, the clerk swears in the jury, and the trial begins. The judge announces, "In the case of Charles Black versus Edward Boganskaya, Katerina Boganskaya, Mark Svoboda, and Paula Svoboda, how do the defendants plead?" Mr. Davies stands and replies, "All of the defendants plead not guilty, Your Honor." Disrupting the flow, Chucky starts laughing at the defense attorney's response, prompting the judge to exclaim, "Order, please. I will not have my courtroom turn into a circus." Kathy whispers to Eddie, "He hasn't seen anything yet." Already knowing the scripted questions prepared by Mr. Davies and Mr. Rice, Kathy knows the judge will have an amusing day. The judge calls Mr. Davies and Mr. Rice to the bench for a private sidebar conversation. The judge, who is familiar with the charges and the plaintiff, asks, "May I ask, sirs, why you have not asked for this case to be dismissed?" Mr. Davies replies, "Your Honor, by requiring the plaintiff to sit for trial, the plaintiff would be less likely to bring any more frivolous charges against our clients and others in the future. This particular plaintiff, quite frankly, has a screw loose and has been a bother to the defendants ever since high school." The judge replies, "Very well. I am quite familiar with Charles Black. I'm sure today will certainly be an interesting day." After the opening statements, Mr. Savage announces, "Your Honor, the plaintiff is ready to proceed in the case against Mr. Boganskaya and the other defendants." The judge announces, "Very well. Please call your first witness, counselor." Mr. Savage announces, "I would like to call to the stand Mr. Charles Black." Chucky stands and walks toward the witness stand with a bounce in his gait, making him appear like an idiot. As Chucky is sworn in, Kathy whispers to Eddie, "Let the circus begin." Mr. Savage asks Chucky, "Will you please state your name for the record?" Chucky replies, "Charles Black." Mr. Savage asks a few other basic preliminary questions, all of which are answered easily by Chucky. At the plaintiff's table, Mr. Davies sits back with his arms crossed, waiting for the circus to begin. Mr. Rice sketches a stick figure of Chucky on his notepad, which looks like a lopsided football with an orange for a head and toothpicks for arms and legs. It is easy to conclude that neither Mr. Rice nor Mr. Davies are too concerned about the trial. Mr. Savage asks Chucky, "Do you recall the events that occurred on the morning of July 20th this year?" Chucky looks down, as if he is sad, and replies, "Yes, I do." Mr. Savage instructs Chucky, "Please tell the court what happened on the morning of July 20th. Chucky explains, "Eddie and Kathy showed up at my front door. They said they came to apologize. Then, they called out to Mark and Paula, who ran across the street." Mr. Savage asks, "At what time was that?" Chucky responds, "It was about 11 o'clock in the morning." Mr. Savage asks, "What happened after that?" Chucky replies, "Two more of everyone suddenly appeared. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. They must have done some kind of trick or something." A low level of snickering is heard among the spectators, many of whom are police officers, who came to watch the shit show. Mr. Savage instructs Chucky, "Please tell the court what happened after that." Chucky energetically replies, "They surrounded me. And then, they started to make fun of me." Mr. Savage asks, "How exactly did they make fun of you?" Chucky replies, "Kathy said I don't want world peace. And Mark said that he was going to put me in their time machine and transport me to Hawaii." Mr. Savage asks, "Did you ask them to leave?" Chucky replies, "I told them all to go away. Then, one of the Kathys threatened me and said that they'll be back. I was really scared. Those guys are really big, and there were so many of them." Now sounding very concerned, Mr. Savage asks, "What did you do after they left?" Chucky replies, "I called the police. I was really scared that they'd all come back." Mr. Savage asks, "And did the police arrive?" Chucky replies, "Yes." Mr. Savage asks, "Did you make a police report?" Chucky replies, "Yes. I told the policeman what happened. I didn't think he took me very seriously." Repeating Chucky's complaint, Mr. Savage loudly orates, "You didn't think the police officer took you seriously." "I see." Mr. Savage limits his questions addressed to Chucky as not to make Chucky appear too crazy. Departing from his first line of questioning and leaving doubts in the jurors' minds that Chucky was treated correctly by the police, Mr. Savage moves on to another of Chucky's complaints. Investigating Chucky's second complaint, Mr. Savage asks Chucky, Approximately 6.5 years ago, do you recall an encounter with Edward Boganskaya and Mark Svoboda? Chucky replies, yes. Mr. Savage instructs Chucky, please tell the court what happened during that encounter. Chucky explains, I was walking on the grass along the parkway, and Eddie started chasing me. He dragged me back to where Mark, Paula, and Kathy were. Then, Paula started kicking me. And then, Eddie told me that we're going for a trip in his time machine. I was really scared. Now having everyone's attention, Mr. Savage instructs Chucky, please tell the court what happened next. Chucky explains, Eddie put his hands over my eyes so I couldn't see anything. Then, he dragged me somewhere. The next thing I knew I was in Hawaii. Eddie told me to walk down the street. When I turned around, Eddie and Mark were gone. I don't know what they did to me. I don't know how I got to Hawaii. I was really, really scared. Mr. Savage asks Chucky, how did you get home? Chucky replies, it was really hard. I had to have my mother buy me an airplane ticket that I picked up at the airport. Again looking very concerned, Mr. Savage asks Chucky, did you call the police and report Eddie and Mark? Chucky replies, yes. Mr. Savage asks, did you file a complaint? Chucky replies, yes. Mr. Savage asks, did the police handle your complaint to your satisfaction? Chucky replies, no. I think the policeman was laughing at me. And nothing was ever done about it. Now appearing very concerned again, Mr. Savage repeats Chucky's testimony, orating, so, you filed a complaint with the police, got laughed at, and nothing was ever done about your complaint. I see. Knowing that Chucky really has a tough case to prove, Mr. Savage is trying to paint the police department in a very dark light. Mr. Savage asks Chucky, at any other time, have Eddie, Mark, or any of the other defendants ever mentioned this time machine? Chucky replies, yes. Mr. Savage confidently instructs Chucky, please tell the court when and where that was. Chucky responds, I brought my mother's car into Eddie's service station to have it repaired. Chucky begins to sob and continues, Eddie told the policeman that he was going to put me in his time machine and transport me to China. I got really scared. Chucky then composes himself and continues with his pre-scripted response. I yelled out, he has a time machine. I told you. He admitted it. Then, Eddie yelled back at me, I have a time machine. And, I'm coming to get you someday. I got really scared. And, the policeman was just laughing at me. Mr. Savage walks around the courtroom with a look of disgust on his face, looks at the jury, and orates, and the policeman was laughing at you. I see. Mr. Savage then asks, can you identify the policeman who laughed at you? Chucky points to Captain Richard Hayes and replies, yes. He's sitting right over there. Mr. Savage instructs the court, please let the record reflect that Mr. Black has identified Captain Richard Hayes as the officer who laughed at him during the encounter at Eddie's service station. Citing three instances of the police not taking Chucky seriously, Mr. Savage is hoping to gain the sympathy of the jury. Mr. Savage, in a brilliant move, does not want to question Chucky extensively regarding the issues at hand. Instead, Mr. Savage is focusing on the alleged poor treatment Chucky received from the police department. But Mr. Rice and Mr. Davies know exactly what Mr. Savage is up to. Mr. Savage announces, I have no more questions for this witness at the current time, Your Honor. But I would like to reserve the right to recall this witness at a future time. The judge replies, very well. Your witness, Mr. Davies and Mr. Rice. Mr. Savage takes a seat and, not knowing either Mr. Davies or Mr. Rice, will now see what he is up against. Mr. Rice stands up and sternly looks at Chucky. Chucky truly believes he can bullshit his way through Mr. Rice's cross-examination. Mr. Rice asks Chucky, Mr. Black, have you ever been arrested on charges related to illegal drugs? Fully understanding Chuck's past drug history, Mr. Savage exclaims, "Your Honor, I object." "Irrelevant." Mr. Rice replies, "Your Honor, if the plaintiff claims he was placed in a time machine, there is a high probability, no pun intended, that the plaintiff could have hallucinated the entire event." The judge replies, "Overruled." The witness will please answer the question. Acting a bit coy, Chucky asks, "What was the question, again?" Mr. Rice again asks Chucky, "Have you ever been arrested on charges related to illegal drugs?" Chucky replies, "I think I was once when I was in high school." Mr. Rice tells Chucky, "Once?" "What would you say if the court records indicate you have not one, but 9 drug convictions?" Chucky replies, "I didn't think it was that many." Mr. Rice orates, "Let me refresh your memory. In your first conviction, you were convicted of possession of marijuana, benzedrine, and LSD. In your second conviction, you were convicted of possession of marijuana with intent to distribute, benzedrine with intent to distribute, and with the possession of opiates without a prescription." Not wanting the jury to hear Chucky's past history involving drugs, Mr. Savage exclaims, "Objection, Your Honor." "Irrelevant." The judge again replies, "Overruled, Mr. Savage." Mr. Rice continues to orate the details of Chucky's other 7 drug-related convictions and 5 stays in a drug rehabilitation facility, clearly giving the impression that Chucky has a problem with drugs. Mr. Rice asks Chucky, "So, Mr. Black, does Edward Boganskaya have a time machine?" Chucky replies, "Yes, he does. He even admitted it." Mr. Rice asks, "Really? Please tell the court what this time machine looks like." Chucky replies, "I can't, exactly." Mr. Rice asks, "And why can't you?" Chucky replies, "I've actually never seen it. But I know he has one. He even admitted it." Mr. Rice asks, "Charles, please be honest. Are you afraid of this alleged time machine that Eddie supposedly has?" With no restrained emotion, Chucky replies, "Yes. He's used it once before on me. And I'm really scared that he'll use it again." Mr. Rice asks Chucky, "Have you ever been diagnosed with chronophobia or chronometrophobia?" Chucky asks, "What's that?" Mr. Rice explains, "Chronophobia is an irrational fear of time and of the passing of time. Chronometrophobia is an irrational fear of timepieces, for example, watches or clocks, or perhaps even a time machine were one to exist." Chucky replies, "I don't think so." Mr. Rice holds up Defense Exhibit B, stating, "I am holding up a copy of Charles Black's medical records from the state mental health facility. Let the court record reflect that, on 3 separate occasions, by 2 separate psychiatrists, Charles Black was diagnosed with chronometrophobia. And, in both instances, Mr. Black referred to an alleged time machine owned by Edward Boganskaya." Mr. Savage wants to object to Mr. Rice's line of questioning, but, in this instance, he knows he cannot. Mr. Rice asks Chucky, "Mr. Black, do you think your prior drug use could have influenced your belief that Eddie allegedly has a time machine?" Chucky mulls over the question and replies, "No." Mr. Rice asks Chucky, "So, Mr. Black, you've smoked enough marijuana and taken enough LSD to make an entire city of people hallucinate, see pink elephants, unicorns, and fire-breathing dragons, and you now expect the court to believe that Eddie has a time machine?" Mr. Savage yells out, "Objection, Your Honor." Mr. Rice smiles and announces, "I withdraw the question, Your Honor." The judge replies, "Very well. The jury will disregard Mr. Rice's last question. Please continue, Mr. Rice." The jury may have been instructed to disregard Mr. Rice's question, but they will certainly not forget it. The members of the jury will also not forget that they all cracked up, laughing hysterically, at Mr. Rice's question. Mr. Rice, clearly making his point that Chucky is crazy, replies, "I have no more questions for this witness, Your Honor. But I would like to turn the witness over to my co-counsel at this time. The judge announces, "Very well. Your witness, Mr. Davies." Mr. Davies stands up, walks over to the witness stand, and asks Chucky, "Mr. Black, in your testimony, you claimed that Edward Boganskaya, Katerina Boganskaya, Mark Svoboda, and Paula Svoboda appeared at your front door at 11 o'clock a.m. on Saturday, July 20th, this year. Is that correct?" Chucky replies, "Yes." Mr. Davies asks, "Are you 100% sure that it was at 11 o'clock a.m. on Saturday, July 20th, this year?" Looking at Mr. Savage, who nods at Chucky, Chucky replies, "Yes." Mr. Davies announces, "At this point, Your Honor, I would like to introduce Defense Exhibit A." As the screen is set up to show the time-lapse video taken on Saturday, July 20th, Mr. Davies explains to the court, "What you are about to see is a time-lapsed video taken this year on Saturday, July 20th at the Northside High School. Please note that, on the video, the date and time are annotated on the bottom left-hand corner of the screen. During the presentation of the evidence, I will be stopping the video at certain key moments. The lights are dimmed, and the technician starts the video. Mr. Davies waits until the clock reads 6:47 a.m. Stopping the video and pointing out Mark and Paula on the video, Mr. Davies tells the court, "Let the court record reflect that, at 6:47 a.m., Mark and Paula Svoboda entered the field of view of the camera. A moment later, after restarting the video, Mr. Davies tells the court, "Let the record reflect that, at 6:50 a.m., Edward and Katerina Boganskaya entered the field of view of the camera." Mr. Savage exclaims, "I object, Your Honor. This is wasting the court's time." The video is stopped, and the judge admonishes Mr. Savage, telling him, "I'll be the judge of that, counselor. Please be reminded that you are not sitting behind the bench." "I am." Mr. Davies tells the judge, "If time is the issue, Your Honor, I can fast forward to the pertinent part of the video." The judge instructs Mr. Davies, "I'd like to see the entire video. I'm sure it will be a learning experience for all of us in the courtroom." The technician restarts the video, with Mr. Davies pointing out the location at the construction site of Eddie, Kathy, Mark, and Paula. As the video plays, Mr. Davies offers commentary on what is transpiring at the construction site. The playback speed is increased, as watching people laying sod is not very exciting. Approaching the 10:45 a.m. time frame, Mr. Davies instructs the technician to slow the video. Mr. Davies announces, "Please focus your attention on the timestamp on the lower left side of the screen, which reads 10:45 a.m. on July 20th. Now, focus on the lower center of the screen, where you can see Eddie and Kathy washing their hands with a hose. Next to Kathy and Eddie are Mark and Paula. Now, standing alongside Eddie, Kathy, Mark, and Paula is Captain Richard Hayes and Officer Erica Bradshaw, both of whom are with the County Police Department. When the timestamp reads exactly 11 a.m., Mr. Davies announces, "Please note that the timestamp now reads 11 o'clock a.m. on Saturday, July 20th, the exact time that Mr. Black alleges that the defendants all appeared at his doorstep." Mr. Savage, who apparently did not review the video that he had access to, is at a loss of how to refute the presented evidence. A moment later, Mr. Davies announces, "Now, please focus your attention on the timestamp on the lower left side of the screen. The timestamp now reads 11:05 a.m., and a delivery van just delivered lunch, which I understand was pizza, bottled water, and soft drinks." While the video continues to play, Mr. Davies commentates, "Please continue focusing your attention at the lower center of the screen, where Eddie, Kathy, Mark, and Paula are eating lunch together with Captain Richard Hayes." The time-lapse video moves along quickly, and is stopped when the timestamp reads 11:48 a.m. Mr. Davies announces to the court, "Entering the video now is Officer Kenneth Wilson who, according to the county dispatcher's records, requested to be 10-7, which means he is busy at the moment and cannot take another call, at 11:44 a.m. on Saturday, July 20th, this year. The video continues until 12:35 p.m., when Mr. Davies instructs the technician, "Please stop the video at this point." Let the record reflect that Officer Kenneth Wilson just left the field of view of the camera and requested to be 10-8, or back on the road and eligible to take a call, at 12:48 p.m. Let the record also reflect that, from 10:45 a.m. until 12:48 p.m., at no time did Edward Boganskaya, Katerina Boganskaya, Mark Svoboda, or Paula Svoboda leave the field of view of the time-lapse camera. As the lights are raised, Mr. Davies asks Chucky, "Mr. Black, after seeing indisputable video evidence that Edward Boganskaya, Katerina Boganskaya, Mark Svoboda, and Paula Svoboda were all at Northside High School from 10:45 a.m. until 12:48 p.m. on Saturday, July 20th. Do you still maintain your testimony that the four defendants appeared at your property shortly after 11 o'clock a.m. on Saturday, July 20th? Chucky exclaims, "The video is a fake. They are making this up." The judge tells Chucky, "Please answer the question, which requires a yes or no answer, Mr. Black." Chucky replies, "Yes. They were all at my house. I saw them." Again reminding the court of Chucky's past, Mr. Davies asks Chucky, "When was your last drug conviction?" Mr. Savage exclaims, "Objection, Your Honor. We've already visited this topic." The judge, knowing exactly what Mr. Davies is up to, replies, "Sustained." Mr. Davies, making his point, tells the judge, "I have no more questions for this witness, Your Honor." The judge tells Mr. Savage, "Please call your next witness, Mr. Savage." Choosing whom he thinks will be an easy target, Mr. Savage announces, "I would like to call Katerina Karakova Boganskaya to the stand." Kathy smiles, knowing that it is her turn to have a little bit of fun. Kathy is sworn in, pleasantly smiling, as she is waiting to rip Mr. Savage to shreds. Mr. Savage asks Kathy, "Please state your name for the record." Kathy replies, "Katerina Boganskaya." Mr. Savage asks, "Katerina, how are you employed?" Kathy replies, "I'm a consultant to the State University's track team." Mr. Savage asks, "Specifically, what do you do for the State University?" Kathy explains, "I review research, suggest research topics for graduate students, help with the training, and help coach the team when one of the coaches are unable to do so." Mr. Savage comments, "That sounds very impressive." Kathy smiles and replies, "I know. But thank you anyway." Laughing is heard coming from the jury and spectators in the courtroom, but the judge lets it go. Moving on to more pertinent questions, Mr. Savage asks Kathy, "Katerina, do you have a twin sister?" Kathy replies, "No." Mr. Savage asks Kathy, "Have you ever seen your double?" Kathy replies, "I don't have a double, at least in this universe. So, I could not have possibly seen that which does not exist." Now frustrated, Mr. Savage asks, "Are you aware of anyone who looks just like you?" Kathy replies, "No." Mr. Savage asks, "Are you sure?" Kathy replies, "Just as sure as I was when I answered you the first time." Mr. Savage gets flustered, knowing that he will be in for a rough ride examining this witness. Moving on, Mr. Savage asks Kathy, "Please tell the court, can you go into the future?" Kathy replies, "Yes, I can. And I just did it right now, while everyone was watching." Thinking that he is now getting somewhere, Mr. Savage asks, "Really? Please explain to the court how you went into the future." Kathy smiles and replies, "A few seconds ticked away on the clock since you asked me that question. So, I traveled to the future and took you and everyone else in the courtroom with me." Several members of the jury laugh, along with a few spectators, which is again ignored by the judge, who is amused at Kathy's technically accurate answer. Shaking his head and moving on, Mr. Savage asks Kathy, "Can you transport yourself and someone else to a remote location, say Hawaii?" Kathy confidently replies, "Yes, I can." Mr. Savage asks Kathy, "And will you tell the court exactly how would you accomplish that?" Kathy replies, "Yes, I will." Waiting for his answer, Mr. Savage asks Kathy, "Well, we're waiting for your answer." Kathy replies, "I answered your question." Mr. Savage looks at the judge, who tells him, "Please reword the question, counselor." Technically, the witness did answer your question. The members of the jury laugh, knowing that Kathy and the judge are hanging Mr. Savage out to dry. And, remembering her days of arguing with Mr. Crum, Kathy knows she won this one. Rewording his question, Mr. Savage instructs Kathy, "Please explain to the court exactly how you would accomplish transporting yourself and someone else to a remote location." Kathy replies, "I would love to. If there was a large body of water between point A and point B, I would definitely take an airplane or boat. If it were a moderate distance across land, I might drive a car. And in the past, I've carried my baby in my hands. And there's always a bicycle built for two." Those watching the trial break out in laughter, causing the judge to strike his gavel and exclaim, "Order. Order, please." Truth is, the judge is trying to conceal his own laughter. Now flustered, Mr. Savage asks Kathy, "Where were you shortly before 11 o'clock in the morning on Saturday, July 20th, this year?" Kathy replies, "At the high school track, with everyone else who we all just saw on the video." Not learning from his past mistake, Mr. Savage asks Kathy, "Are you 100% sure?" As she did before, Kathy smiles and replies, "Just as sure as I was when I answered your question the first time." Walking in circles, knowing he is getting nowhere, Mr. Savage asks Kathy, "So, on Saturday, July 20th, you are claiming that you were not in Mr. Charles Black's front yard?" Kathy replies, "Well, I suppose that I could have used Eddie's time machine to get there." Laughter breaks out in the courtroom, prompting the judge to strike his gavel and exclaim, "Order. Order in the courtroom." Quickly realizing that he has underestimated Kathy, Mr. Savage throws one hand in the air and informs the judge, "I have no more questions for this witness, Your Honor." The judge replies, "Very well. Your witness, Mr. Davies and Mr. Rice." Mr. Savage takes a seat, wondering what questions Mr. Davies has up his sleeve. Mr. Davies instructs Kathy, "Please tell the court exactly where you were on Saturday, July 20th. Kathy replies, "I was at Northside High School." Mr. Davies asks, "What were you doing at the Northside High School on Saturday, July 20th? Kathy replies, "Laying sod, along with 5 dozen other people, just like we saw on the video." Mr. Davies asks, "On that date, at what time did you arrive at Northside High School?" Kathy replies, "Right before 7 a.m. Mr. Davies asks, "At what time did you leave?" Kathy replies, "Sometime after 4 p.m. Mr. Davies asks, "During the period from 7 a.m. to 4 p.m., did you leave the high school grounds at any time?" Kathy replies, "No." Finished with showing Mr. Savage how to properly question a witness, Mr. Davies tells the judge, "I have no more questions for this witness, Your Honor." The judge instructs Kathy, "The witness may step down." The judge tells Mr. Savage, "Please call your next witness, Mr. Savage." Realizing he was way over his head in questioning Kathy, Mr. Savage announces, "I would like to call Edward Bogenskaya to the stand." Eddie takes a seat on the witness stand, looking forward to his turn to ostracize Mr. Savage. Eddie is sworn in, and Chucky looks very worried. Mr. Savage, on the other hand, looks confident that he can extract some sort of confession out of Eddie. Mr. Savage asks Eddie, "Please state your name for the record." Eddie replies, "Edward Bogenskaya." Mr. Savage asks, "Edward, how are you employed?" Eddie replies, "I'm a mechanic." Reiterating Eddie's answer, Mr. Savage repeats, "A mechanic." Eddie replies, "Yes. A mechanic, as in one mechanic." not three mechanics, like the chucker claimed earlier. Hearing those in the courtroom break out in laughter, Mr. Savage turns to the judge and requests, "Your Honor, I request that Mr. Boganskaya be treated as a hostile witness." The judge, who also laughed at Eddie's answer, instructs Mr. Savage, "Granted, counselor. You may treat the witness however you would like, Mr. Savage." It is clear to the attorneys that Mr. Savage has been put on some sort of unofficial warning by the judge. Mr. Savage asks Eddie, "Edward, do you recall an encounter you had approximately 6½ years ago with Charles Black?" Eddie replies, "I remember a couple of encounters with the Chucky." Refining his question, Mr. Savage asks, "Do you remember a specific encounter along a paved path that follows the parkway from the town you live in to the beach?" Eddie replies, "Yes. That was the time the Chucky shot an arrow at Paula's bicycle." Avoiding the issue of the arrow, Mr. Savage asks Eddie, "At that time, did you, in fact, Edward, put your hands over Charles' eyes and tell him that he's going for a trip in a time machine?" Eddie replies, "Yes." Now thinking that he is getting somewhere, Mr. Savage asks Eddie, "Edward, do you have a time machine?" Eddie replies, "No." Asking the next logical question in the sequence, Mr. Savage asks, "Then, why did you tell Charles that you have a time machine?" Eddie replies, "Because the Chucky is a real sucker. He'll believe anything." Reiterating Eddie's answer, Mr. Savage shakes his head and repeats, "I see. Charles is a real sucker." Eddie quickly replies, "I'm glad you agree." Now annoyed, Mr. Savage announces, "Let the court be reminded that Edward Boganskaya is considered a hostile witness." Eddie replies, "Thank you." Raising his voice, Mr. Savage asks, "Edward, can you explain how Charles Black landed in Hawaii 6½ years ago after an encounter with you and Mark?" Eddie leans back in the witness chair and replies, "You know, I think I probably can." Mr. Savage asks, "Will you tell the court how you believe Charles Black landed in Hawaii?" Learning from Kathy, Eddie replies, "Yes." There is silence in the courtroom as Mr. Savage is waiting for Eddie's answer. Finally, learning from his prior mistaken wording when questioning Kathy, Mr. Savage tells Eddie, "Please tell the court how you believe Charles Black landed in Hawaii." Eddie replies, "The Chucky probably took way too many drugs, bought an airplane ticket, and flew to Hawaii. Then, when he came back to reality, he had no idea how he got to Hawaii. So, he blamed me." Pacing back and forth, Mr. Savage, now expressing anger, asks Eddie, "That's it? An airplane ticket? That's your explanation of how Charles landed in Hawaii?" Eddie replies, "Yeah. Exactly. That's the ticket, unless you have a better explanation. And it couldn't have been a boat, because the drugs would have worn off way before the Chucky got to Hawaii." Mr. Savage asks Eddie, "Have you ever flown to Hawaii?" Eddie replies, "No." Not knowing where to go next, Mr. Savage contemplates moving on to the other charges he brought against Eddie. Moving on to his pre-scripted questions, Mr. Savage asks Eddie, "Edward, do you have a twin brother?" Eddie replies, "No." Mr. Savage asks Eddie, "Have you ever seen your double, or anyone who may look like you?" Eddie replies, "Only in a mirror." Not immediately comprehending Eddie's answer, Mr. Savage asks, "Are you sure?" Eddie replies, "Yes." Now getting some marginally straight answers out of Eddie, Mr. Savage appears relieved. Mr. Savage asks Eddie, "Where were you shortly before 11 o'clock in the morning on Saturday, July 20th, this year?" Eddie replies, "At the high school track, with Kathy, just like you, and everyone else, saw on the video earlier." Mr. Savage asks Eddie, "So, on Saturday, July 20th, you claim that you were not in the presence of Mr. Charles Black in his front yard?" Fueling the fire, Eddie replies, "I was at the track." How much more stupid can this get? I mean, like, seriously, Junior. You, and everyone else here, saw me on the video. Light laughter again breaks out in the courtroom, prompting the judge to strike his gavel and exclaim, "Order. Order, please." Mr. Savage informs the judge, "Your Honor, I am unable to get anywhere with this witness." The judge, who is aware that the trial is a joke, advises Mr. Savage, "Then, tender the witness, counselor, and reserve the right to recall him at a later time if you choose." Mr. Savage throws his hand in the air and exclaims, "I tender the witness, Your Honor." Mr. Savage takes a seat, fumbling through a few papers, now realizing he is way above his head in this case. Mr. Davies stands up and instructs Eddie, "Please tell the court exactly where you were on Saturday, July 20th. Eddie replies, "At Northside High School." Mr. Davies asks, "On that date, at what time did you get there?" Eddie replies, "Right before 7 a.m. Mr. Davies asks, "At what time did you leave?" Eddie replies, "Sometime after 4 p.m. Mr. Davies asks, "During the period from 7 a.m. to 4 p.m., did you leave the high school grounds at any time?" Eddie replies, "No." Hearing Eddie's testimony, Chucky exclaims, "He's lying. He's lying." The judge hammers his gavel and tells Mr. Savage, "Please control your client, counselor. I will not tolerate these kinds of outbursts in my courtroom. Am I clear?" Mr. Savage replies, "Yes, Your Honor. I apologize for my client's actions." Mr. Savage then admonishes Chucky, telling him, "Please remain calm. Yelling out in the courtroom will not get you anywhere." Moving on to the next subject, Mr. Davies instructs Eddie, "Please remind the court how you are employed." Eddie replies, "I'm an automobile mechanic." Mr. Davies smiles and asks, "An automobile mechanic? I understand. So, would it be safe to say that you would recognize a machine if you saw one?" Eddie replies, "Yes." Mr. Davies asks Eddie, "Will you please tell the court what a time machine looks like?" Eddie replies by handing Mr. Davies a picture of a time machine from a comic book, stating, "If I had to guess, a time machine would probably look something like this." Mr. Davies walks around the courtroom, showing the hilarious picture of a time machine to the judge, jury, Mr. Rice, and the other defendants, all who try not to laugh when they see the comic book rendition of a time machine. Last to see the picture of the time machine is Mr. Savage, who is not at all happy. Mr. Savage yells out, "Your Honor, I object." Mr. Davies is attempting to make a mockery of this trial. Trying not to laugh, the judge replies, "Overruled, counselor." Mr. Davies was merely trying to communicate the defendant's conception of what a time machine would look like were one to exist. Mr. Rice, sitting at the defendant's table, smiles, knowing that Mr. Savage was set up. Mr. Davies asks, "Edward, is there any reason why you told Charles Black that you have a time machine?" Eddie replies, "Yes." Mr. Davies instructs Eddie, "Please inform the court of your reason." Eddie replies, "Because the Chucky is afraid of time machines." Eddie then puts on a silly grin and tells Mr. Davies, "Watch this. Hey, Chucky. After this trial, me and Mark are going to put you in my time machine and transport you to Siberia." Chucky stands up and exclaims, "See? Arrest him. He has a time machine. He admitted it. Nobody believes me." As the judge hammers his gavel, Mr. Savage tells Chucky, "Charles, please control yourself." The judge exclaims, "Order. Order, please." Addressing Mr. Savage, the judge exclaims, "Mr. Savage, if there are any further outbursts by the plaintiff, I will cite him with contempt of court." Truth be told, the judge is quite amused and cares not that Eddie antagonized Chucky. Mr. Davies, clearly making his point that Chucky is crazy, informs the court, "I have no more questions for this witness, Your Honor." The judge instructs Eddie, "The witness may step down." Mr. Davies takes a seat, wondering who Mr. Savage will call next as a witness. Mr. Savage, being forewarned that Mark is the master of messing with people, announces, the prosecution would like to call Mark Svoboda to the stand. With a silly grin, Mark smiles and takes a seat on the witness stand. Mr. Savage asks Mark, "Will you state your name for the record?" Quickly catching on to answering questions exactly how they are asked, Mark replies, "Yes." After an uncomfortable pause filled by the sounds of the members of the jury snickering under their breath, Mr. Savage asks, "And what would your name be?" Mark replies, "Mark Svoboda." Mr. Savage asks, "Mark, how are you employed?" Mark replies, "I'm a contractor and a jobber." Mr. Savage asks, "And exactly what is a jobber?" Mark replies, "A jobber does jobs." Mr. Savage asks, "Will you be more specific?" Mark replies, "No." By using the word will, Mr. Savage technically gave Mark a choice of whether to be more specific or not. Mark clearly chose not to be more specific. Biting his lip, quite frustrated with Mark's responses, Mr. Savage asks the judge, "Your Honor, I request that Mr. Svoboda also be treated as a hostile witness." The judge, already tired of Mr. Savage's antics, replies, "Right now, I see no basis for your request, so I am going to deny it. The witness has answered your questions accurately. Please consider wording your questions in a way to better obtain the answers you are looking for, counselor." Trying to accurately ask a question, Mr. Savage sarcastically instructs Mark, "Okay, Mark, please give the court a few examples of what you do and do not do as a jobber." Mark replies, "I frame houses, put in flooring, do electrical and plumbing work, and so on. I am also a general contractor. For example, I was the general contractor responsible for putting in the new track at Northside High School. What I don't do is build or repair automobiles, and I don't build or repair time machines." Hearing snickering and laughter coming from those in the courtroom, Mr. Savage bites his lip again. Pacing the floor, Mr. Savage asks Mark, "Mark, do you recall an encounter approximately 6.5 years ago with Charles Black?" Mark replies, "If you were referring to the one when the Chucky shot an arrow into Paula's front wheel, yes. I remember that day well." Again avoiding the issue of the arrow, Mr. Savage asks Mark, "At that time, did you drag Charles Black into a time machine with Edward Boganskaya?" Mark replies, "No." Mr. Savage asks, "Are you telling this court that you did not drag the plaintiff, threatening him and telling him that you were going to put him in a time machine?" Mark replies, "Exactly. And, by the way, Junior, you're telling the court that. Not me." At a loss for words, Mr. Savage, clearly angry with being referred to as Junior, paces for a moment and decides to move on. Getting absolutely nowhere with Mark, Mr. Savage bluntly asks Mark, "Did you traumatize Charles Black at any time during that encounter along the parkway?" Mark replies, "No." Mr. Savage asks Mark, "Did you hear Edward Boganskaya tell Charles Black that he has a time machine?" Mark replies, "Yes." Mr. Savage asks, "At any time, have you personally ever told Charles Black that you, Eddie, or anyone else, has a time machine?" Mark replies, "Yes." Thinking he is now getting somewhere, Mr. Savage asks Mark, "Can you explain to the court why Eddie told Charles that he has a time machine?" Mr. Davies announces, "I object, Your Honor." Calls for speculation. The judge replies, "Sustained." Hoping to get to his answer another way, Mr. Savage asks Mark, "Why did you tell Charles that you, or anyone else, has a time machine?" Mark replies, "Because the Chucky is a sucker. We tell him all kinds of shit. He's stupid enough to believe it. I mean, like, the Chucky is seriously crazy." Mr. Savage instructs Mark, "Please tell the court what other kind of shit, to use your expression, that you or anyone else told Charles." Mark replies, "Well, at the end of my freshman year, Kathy told Chucky that she's an aeroplane. Chucky was pretty doped up when she told him that." Not wanting to go down the path of Chucky's past drug use, following his script, Mr. Savage asks, Mark, have you ever flown to Hawaii? Mark replies, I can't. Mr. Savage asks, you can't. Please explain to the court why you cannot fly to Hawaii. Mark replies, birds have wings. Birds can fly. Humans don't have wings. So, humans can't fly. So, it's physically impossible for me to fly. Mr. Savage looks at the judge, clearly expecting the judge to say something. With no response from the judge, Mr. Savage asks Mark, have you ever flown a plane to Hawaii? Mark replies, I don't have a pilot's license, so I can't fly a plane. Showing his frustrations, Mr. Savage pauses, carefully wording his next question in his head, and asks Mark, have you ever been in an airplane as a passenger, commercial or otherwise, in which the destination was Hawaii? Mark replies, no. Clearly hitting another dead-end street regarding the kidnapping charges, Mr. Savage moves on to the harassment and trespassing charges. With no unique questions, Mr. Savage asks Mark, Mark, do you have a twin brother? Mark replies, no. Mr. Savage asks Mark, have you ever seen your double, or anyone who may look like you? Mark replies, not in this universe. Mark would be telling the truth. He has seen himself in a parallel universe, but not this one. Mr. Savage asks Mark, where were you shortly before 11 o'clock in the morning on Saturday, July 20th, this year? Mark replies, at the high school track, just like you saw on the video. Mr. Savage asks Mark, so, you maintain that, on Saturday, July 20th, you were not in the presence of Mr. Charles Black in his front yard. Seeing an opening to mess with Mr. Savage, Mark replies, seriously, Junior? I was right there on the video. You have to be blind not to see me there with everyone else. This is really getting beyond ridiculous. Hearing the laughter in the courtroom, Mr. Savage turns to the judge and requests, Your Honor, at this time I would like to request that Mr. Svoboda be treated as a hostile witness. The judge instructs Mr. Savage, granted, counselor. After all, Mark was being a bit on the difficult side to work with. Mark turns to the judge and asks, Your Honor, can I request that Mr. Savage be treated as a hostile attorney? Trying not to laugh at Mark's request, the judge replies, I'm tempted to grant your request, Mr. Svoboda. But, unfortunately, we have no such designation in the courtroom. Finally realizing he is no match for Mark, Mr. Savage tells the judge, I tender the witness, Your Honor. Mr. Davies stands up and asks Mark, please tell the court exactly where you were on Saturday, July 20th, this year. Mark replies, at Northside High School. Mr. Davies asks, on that date, at what time did you get there? Mark replies, sometime before 7 a.m. Mr. Davies asks, at what time did you leave? Mark replies, sometime after 4 p.m. Mr. Davies asks, during the period from 7 a.m. to 4 p.m., did you leave the high school grounds at any time? Mark replies, no. Mr. Davies then strategically announces, I tender the witness, Your Honor. But, I would like to reserve the right to recall this witness further should I need to question him regarding some sort of alleged time machine. The judge replies, very well. You may step down, Mr. Svoboda. The judge again instructs Mr. Savage, you may call your next witness, Mr. Savage. Moving down the witness list, Mr. Savage announces, the prosecution would like to call Paula Svoboda to the stand. Paula takes the witness stand and is sworn in. Looking over at Chucky, Paula cracks an interesting smile. At this point in the trial, even Chucky, perhaps, can figure out what is on its way. After all, following the incident with the arrow on the path adjacent to the parkway many years ago, Chucky cannot stand Paula. The animosity is indisputably mutual. Mr. Savage asks Paula, please state your name for the record. Paula replies, Paula Svoboda. Paula is asked a few other preliminary questions, which go very smoothly, giving Mr. Savage a false sense of security. Moving on to the pertinent questions, Mr. Savage asks Paula, "Paula, do you have a twin sister?" Paula replies, "No. I don't have a body double either. And I'm not aware of anyone who looks just like me. And for the record, if you ask the question again, you'll get the same answer. Your move." Mr. Savage looks at Paula with anger, not knowing how to even respond. The expected smooth sailing abruptly hit stormy waters. Moving on, Mr. Savage asks Paula, "Please tell the court, can you go into the future?" Paula looks at the judge and asks, "Is this guy serious?" The judge tells Paula, "Apparently, he is. So, please answer the question." Answering Mr. Savage's question, Paula replies, "Just like Mark, Kathy, and Eddie, yes, I can. We all can. We're doing it right now, just like Kathy explained earlier." Asking an equally ridiculous question, Mr. Savage sarcastically asks, "And I suppose you also deny the existence of this alleged time machine?" Paula responds, "Are you serious? The only place I've seen a time machine is in cartoons. I can draw a picture of one if you want." Shaking his head and knowing he is getting nowhere with Paula, Mr. Savage orates, "Let's back up to 6½ years ago. At that time, when you met Charles Black on the path adjacent to the parkway with Edward Boganskaya, Katerina Boganskaya, and Mark Svoboda, did you, in fact, traumatize Charles Black in any way, specifically by kicking him with your feet?" Paula asks, "How else would you kick someone if it wasn't with your feet?" Mr. Savage takes a deep breath, exhaling his frustration out his nose. Before Mr. Savage can collect his thoughts, Paula continues, stating, "I've kicked the Chucky on several occasions. So, when he shot the arrow into the front wheel of my bicycle, yes, I kicked him because he was being an asshole." Wanting to embellish a bit on Paula's sarcasm, Mr. Savage comments, "So, Charles was being an asshole when he supposedly shot this alleged arrow toward your bicycle." "I see." Paula replies, "I'm glad you agree. And, for the record, it's not an alleged arrow. Alleged arrows don't break spokes. Real arrows do. Got it?" Mr. Savage looks at the judge, holding his hand out in the air. Before Mr. Savage can air his complaint, the judge informs Mr. Savage, "You should have seen that one coming, counselor. Please continue questioning the witness. It's no secret the judge has heard enough today." Thus far, getting absolutely nowhere with Paula, Mr. Savage asks, "Where were you shortly before 11 o'clock in the morning on Saturday, July 20th, this year?" Paula replies, asking, "Can't we just ditto everyone else's answer?" Paula then exclaims, "I was at the high school track, with everyone else laying sod. Jeesh." Next question. Not getting anywhere with Paula, Mr. Savage tells the judge, "At this point, Your Honor, I'd like to admit Paula Svoboda as a hostile witness." Not caring in the least bit, and hoping for more free entertainment, the judge tells Mr. Savage, "Granted, counselor. I will allow it. Please continue." Paula smiles and asks the judge, "Since I'm now a hostile witness, am I allowed to kick Mr. Savage?" The judge laughs and tells Paula, "Unfortunately not, Mrs. Svoboda. Normally, a witness would be severely reprimanded by a judge for such a remark. But in consideration of what the judge has heard thus far in this trial, he allowed Paula's comment to slide." Quickly realizing that he has also underestimated Paula, Mr. Savage informs the judge, "I have no more questions for this witness, Your Honor." Even Mr. Savage has figured out that any further questioning of Paula will be more of the same. The judge replies, "Very well, counselor. Your witness, Mr. Davies and Mr. Rice." Mr. Savage takes a seat, glad to get questioning of the four defendants over with. Mr. Davies instructs Paula, "Please tell the court exactly where you were on Saturday, July 20th. Paula replies, I was at Northside High School with my husband, Mark, and what? 5 dozen other people. Mr. Davies asks, what were you doing at the Northside High School on Saturday, July 20th? Paula replies, laying sod, along with 5 dozen other people, just like we saw on the video. Mr. Davies asks, on that date, at what time did you arrive at Northside High School? Paula replies, right around 7 a.m. Mr. Davies asks, at what time did you leave? Paula replies, sometime right after 4 p.m. Mr. Davies asks, during the period from 7 a.m. to 4 p.m., did you leave the high school grounds at any time? Paula replies, no. Not at all. Was there the whole time, just like the video shows? Mr. Davies tells the judge, I have no more questions for this witness, Your Honor. The judge instructs Paula, the witness may step down. As Paula is taking a seat at the defendant's table, Kathy wants to give Paula a high five, but, for obvious reasons, she cannot. Mr. Davies whispers to Paula, now, the circus really begins. He's likely going to move on to law enforcement. Paula sits back, ready to watch as Mr. Savage's shit show gets into high gear. The judge again instructs Mr. Savage, you may call your next witness, Mr. Savage. Moving down the list, Mr. Savage announces, the prosecution would like to call Officer Kenneth Wilson to the stand. Officer Wilson takes the witness stand, and the judge advises Officer Wilson, please be advised that, as an officer of the court working in an official capacity, you are sworn in as a witness. Officer Wilson replies, understood, Your Honor. Paula whispers to Mark, he skipped all our counterparts from the other universes. What a bummer. Mark laughs and whispers back, that would be kind of funny. Paula is somewhat disappointed that her counterparts did not get called as witnesses. Once the preliminary questions are out of the way, Mr. Savage asks Officer Wilson, on Saturday, July 20th, you received a call from the dispatcher at 11:22 a.m. requesting you to meet Mr. Charles Black, the plaintiff, at his house. Am I correct? Officer Wilson replies, yes. That is correct. Mr. Savage asks, when you arrived, in what state did you find the plaintiff? Officer Wilson replies, he was acting a little crazy. The jury and spectators, who have already figured out that Chucky is crazy, all snicker under their breath. Mr. Savage asks, crazy? In what way? Officer Wilson explains, Charles Black claimed that there were three people who matched the description of each Edward Boganskaya, Katerina Boganskaya, Mark Svoboda, and Paula Svoboda in his front yard. Charles Black made several complaints, all of which are outlined in my report. Mr. Savage asks, Officer Wilson, what exactly were Mr. Black's complaints? Officer Wilson replies, 1. Trespassing. 2. The defendants made vague threats which the plaintiff could not substantiate or adequately verbalize. And 3. The plaintiff claims the defendants threatened to put the plaintiff in a time machine and transport him to Hawaii. Mr. Savage asks, did you investigate fully all of Mr. Black's complaints? Officer Wilson replies, yes. Mr. Savage asks, and what were the results of your investigation? Officer Wilson replies, I concluded that all of Mr. Black's complaints were baseless and unfounded. Mr. Savage asks the officer, did you follow up on Mr. Black's complaints? Officer Wilson replies, no. I wrote it off as another 1073. Mr. Savage asks, and what exactly is a 1073? Officer Wilson replies, a 1073 is a crazy person or mental patient. Now wishing that he had not put Officer Wilson on the stand, Mr. Savage concludes, so, you wrote the plaintiff off as a crazy person. Is that correct? Officer Wilson replies, that is correct, sir. Mr. Savage, knowing that he has no case, is clearly attempting to make Chucky the victim of mistreatment by the police. Not wanting to dig himself into a deeper hole, Mr. Savage tenders the witness and takes a seat. The judge tells Mr. Davies and Mr. Rice, "Your witness, counselors." Mr. Rice stands up and approaches the witness stand. Mr. Rice asks Officer Wilson, "Officer Wilson, will you please tell the court what you did after you left the residence of Charles Black on Saturday, July 20th? Officer Wilson replies, "I immediately drove over to Northside High School." Mr. Rice asks, "Why did you specifically choose that destination?" Officer Wilson replies, "On that particular day, I was taking Officer Erica Bradshaw's shift. Officer Bradshaw wanted to take that day off so she can help lay sod at the track, along with the defendants and quite a few others." Mr. Rice asks, "What did you discover when you arrived at Northside High School?" Officer Wilson replies, "All four of the defendants were present at the high school at the time of my arrival. My superior officer, Captain Hayes, informed me that he arrived at the high school at 10:30 a.m., at which time all the defendants were present and had not left since his arrival. When I left, I checked the engines of all the vehicles in the parking lot. All engines were cold." Mr. Rice asks, "And what did your investigation conclude?" Officer Wilson replies, "I concluded that Mr. Black's complaints were baseless and unfounded, as the defendants all had a rock-solid alibi." Making his points, Mr. Rice announces, "I have no more questions for Officer Wilson at this time, Your Honor." The judge replies, "Very well. You may step down, Officer Wilson." Officer Wilson steps down, making it very clear that the four defendants could not have been at Chucky's home when Chucky claims they were. The judge tells Mr. Savage, "You may call your next witness, Mr. Savage." At a total loss as how to proceed with his case, Mr. Savage replies, "At this time, Your Honor, the prosecution rests its case." Truth is that Mr. Savage has no credible witnesses to support his case. Not to mention, every witness Mr. Savage has called thus far has been counterproductive to making his case. The judge has a brief discussion with the bailiff, who announces, "The morning session of court is now adjourned for lunch recess. The trial will continue at exactly 1:30 p.m., at which time the defense will present its case." The judge hammers his gavel, and everyone breaks for lunch. Returning from lunch, Chucky looks very worried, now skeptical whether he will win his case. Eddie and the other defendants look very confident, fully expecting to win their case. Mr. Savage expects to be raked over the coals during the afternoon session. Mr. Davies and Mr. Rice fully intend to be the ones to rake Mr. Savage over the coals. In all his years, the judge has never heard such a ridiculous case. The jury, enjoying today's free entertainment, can't wait to hear this afternoon's arguments. The bailiff announces, "All rise." All attendees stand as the bailiff proclaims, "Hear ye, hear ye." The court is again in session. The judge takes his seat at the bench and strikes his gavel, opening the afternoon session of court. After a few announcements, the judge announces, "The defense may now call its first witness." Mr. Davies announces, "The defense calls Angela Meadows to the stand. Since she is an expert witness, Angela is called first and will be granted the liberty to go home after testifying." Angela is sworn in and takes the witness stand. After a few preliminary questions, Mr. Davies asks Angela, "Angela, you set up the time-lapse camera on the storage building adjacent to the Northside High School track. Am I correct?" Angela replies, "Yes. That is correct." Mr. Davies asks, "As far as your knowledge goes, is the timestamp on the video accurate?" Angela replies, "Yes." Mr. Davies asks, "How do you know?" Angela explains, "I was there on July 20th, taking still photographs of the workers laying sod. I'm on the video with my Nikon camera, which I brought that day to photograph the workers working." Mr. Davies asks, "Is there any possibility whatsoever that the timestamp on the video we saw today is incorrect?" Angela replies, "Not at all." Mr. Davies strategically asks, Is there any way that the camera can be turned on or off from the ground? Angela replies, no. You'd have to go on the roof of the storage building to do that. Succinctly making his point, Mr. Davies announces, I tender the witness, Your Honor. The judge tells Mr. Savage, Your witness, Mr. Savage. Mr. Savage stands, fully expecting to trap Angela in a technicality. Mr. Savage, mimicking Mr. Davies' questioning style, asks Angela, Angela, you have a master's degree in communications. Am I correct? Angela replies, yes. I do. Mr. Savage asks, how were your grades over at the State University where you received your degree? Angela replies, I graduated with a bachelor's degree with a 3.9 GPA and had a 4.0 in my communications classes. And when I was in the master's program, my GPA was a 4.0. Buttering up the witness, Mr. Savage smiles and comments, that sounds very impressive. Angela replies, thank you. Mr. Savage adds, you must be very proud of your accomplishments. Unexpectedly to Mr. Savage, Angela does not venture to respond to his last comment, but Mr. Savage technically did not ask a question. Moving on to more pertinent questions, Mr. Savage asks, Angela, exactly how accurate is the clock in the time-lapse camera you installed at Northside High School? Referring to the owner's manual for the time-lapse camera, Angela replies, in the worst case, the clock is accurate within 5 seconds per month. 3 seconds per month is the nominal deviation from normal. Mr. Savage asks, 5 seconds per month is not very accurate. Wouldn't you agree? Angela replies, no. Not at all. Now resorting to generating questions on the fly, Mr. Savage instructs Angela, please explain to the court why you believe 5 seconds per month is considered accurate when, in fact, it is clearly not. Angela explains, the camera is designed to operate from minus 20 degrees to 140 degrees Fahrenheit. The accuracy of the clock largely depends on the temperature of the operating environment. And 5 seconds per month is 1 minute per year. I wouldn't exactly categorize that as inaccurate. Mr. Savage was totally blindsided by Angela's response. Going in for the kill, Mr. Savage asks, Angela, do you have an engineering degree? Angela replies, no. Mr. Savage asks, then, will you please explain to the court how you can so confidently attest to the accuracy of the clock in the camera? Angela replies, the camera manufacturer hires engineers. The accuracy of the clock was determined by the manufacturer's engineers, not me. I have absolutely no reason to doubt the manufacturer's published specifications. Mr. Savage asks, Miss Meadows, did you set the clock on the camera yourself? Angela replies, yes. Mr. Savage asks, are you certain that you set the camera's clock accurately? Angela replies, yes. Repeating himself, Mr. Savage asks, you're that confident that the time on the camera's clock was set accurately, Miss Meadows? Angela replies, if you have any doubts, sir, you can check the time on the video with the police dispatcher's records. I'm quite confident that the times would agree. And I'm also quite confident that the police department has already checked whether the clock on the camera is accurate. Not expecting to get anywhere with this witness, Mr. Savage announces, I have no more questions for this witness, Your Honor. The judge replies, very well. You may step down, Miss Meadows. Mr. Davies tells Angela that she can go home since her testimony is complete. Mr. Davies announces, the defense would like to call Captain Richard Hayes to the stand. That announcement was, by far, the last thing Mr. Savage wanted to hear this afternoon. Captain Hayes is advised that, as an officer of the law, he is already sworn in and takes the stand. Mr. Savage sits nervously, waiting to see what damaging testimony Captain Hayes has to offer. Captain Hayes, who sounds very authoritative, answers a few preliminary questions. Mr. Davies then asks Captain Hayes, at what time did you arrive at Northside High School on Saturday, July 20th. Captain Hayes responds, I arrived at 10:30 a.m. Mr. Davies asks, and what time did you leave? Captain Hayes replies, I departed shortly after noon. Mr. Davies asks, during that time, did you see Edward Boganskaya, Mark Svoboda, Katerina Boganskaya, or Paula Svoboda leave the Northside High School grounds? Captain Hayes emphatically replies, no. They were in my presence from the time of my arrival until the time of my departure. Mr. Davies asks, in your professional opinion, could any of the four defendants have been at the residence of Charles Black at the time Mr. Black claims the defendants trespassed on his property? Captain Hayes replies, absolutely not. Revisiting an earlier concern, Mr. Davies asks Captain Hayes, has your department verified the time on the time elapsed video known as Defense Exhibit A? Captain Hayes replies, yes, we have. Mr. Davies asks, and what did the department find? Reviewing his notes, Captain Hayes responds, the date is correct. In correlation with the dispatcher's records, the clock on the video is within 1 minute and 30 seconds of the official clock in the radio room. Mr. Davies asks, how accurate is the police department's official clock in the radio room? Captain Hayes replies, the clock in the radio room is synchronized with the atomic clock in Boulder, Colorado. So, the clock is spot on. Mr. Davies announces, at this time, Your Honor, I would like to turn the witness over to Mr. Rice, my co-counsel. The judge replies, very well. Your witness, Mr. Rice. With his head now being held in his hands, Mr. Savage can only imagine what type of questions Mr. Rice has up his sleeve. Mr. Rice asks Captain Hayes, Captain Hayes, are there any laws that you are aware of governing the use of time machines? Mr. Savage immediately rises up and exclaims, Your Honor, I object. I do not understand where Mr. Rice could possibly be going with this line of questioning. Mr. Rice quickly responds, I could explain that, Your Honor. Not wanting to deal with Mr. Savage, the judge instructs Mr. Rice, please do, Counselor. Mr. Rice, trying not to laugh, explains, the prosecution is the party who brought up the concept of a time machine. I am merely trying to discover how the use of a time machine is governed by law, were one to exist. I did an extensive search on laws regarding the use of time machines, and could not find any applicable laws. I was just curious as to whether the police department was aware of any such laws. The judge proclaims, overruled, Mr. Savage. I am curious to hear this myself. The judge is rolling out the red carpet for Mr. Rice, who is in the process of throwing Mr. Savage under the bus. Purely to annoy Mr. Savage, Mr. Rice again asks the question, Captain Hayes, are there any laws that you are aware of governing the use of time machines? Captain Hayes replies, no. Mr. Rice asks, why not? Captain Hayes replies, because, as far as my knowledge goes, time machines do not exist. Mr. Rice repeats, time machines do not exist. Are you certain? Captain Hayes replies, yes. Mr. Rice asks the captain, so, in your professional opinion, the defendants Edward Boganskaya and Mark Svoboda could not have transported Charles Black to Hawaii in a time machine? Captain Hayes replies, absolutely not. Abruptly shifting gears and intentionally asking a vague question, Mr. Rice asks Captain Hayes, how would you characterize the plaintiff? Captain Hayes candidly replies, he's crazy. He's a real nut job if I ever saw one. Mr. Savage exclaims, objection, Your Honor. The officer is offering a medical opinion. The judge responds, overruled, Mr. Savage. A police officer is trained to differentiate normal from abnormal. That is part of their job. Mr. Rice asks, can you substantiate your claim that Charles Black is a nut job? Reviewing Chucky's rap sheet, Captain Hayes replies, Charles Black has had 9 drug-related convictions, 5 extended stays at a drug rehabilitation facility, 6 moving violations leading to suspension of his driver's license for a period of 1 year, and has 12 prior unsubstantiated complaints made to the police department. One of those complaints was against Edward Boganskaya approximately 6 years ago on April 4th, when this Charles Black character alleged that Edward Boganskaya was going to place Mr. Black in a time machine and transport him to China. The jury laughs as Mr. Rice instructs Captain Hayes, "Please tell the court when and where was that specific complaint made?" Captain Hayes replies, "The complaint was made about a month later, on Friday, May 9th, that same year, when Mr. Black was confined to the state mental health facility over on Central Avenue." Mr. Rice asks, "Captain Hayes, are there any other instances that you can think of that can substantiate your claim that Charles Black is a nut job?" Staring out into space with his head cocked to the left, Captain Hayes replies, "Yes. In another instance, this Charles Black character made a complaint that the police department was working with Officer Braden and were tapping his telephone. As it turns out, the cable company was installing a cable from the utility pole in front of Charles Black's house to Officer Braden's house. If I remember correctly, 3 such calls were made to the department within a 2-hour time span. Taking the 3rd call, the officer found this Charles Black character yelling obscenities at Wendy Braden, Officer Braden's wife. The officer handling the calls wrote those off as another 1073. Mr. Rice announces, "I think I get the picture." Leaving no uncertainty of the mental fitness of the plaintiff, Chucky, Mr. Rice announces, "I tender the witness, Your Honor." The judge instructs Mr. Savage, "Your witness, Mr. Savage." Sounding quite disgusted, Mr. Savage replies, "Thank you." Mr. Savage stands up, having absolutely no idea how to question Captain Hayes. Mr. Savage asks Captain Hayes, "How long have you known the defendants, Captain Hayes?" Captain Hayes replies, "I've known them since they were in high school, which would be a little more than a decade." Mr. Savage asks, "Really? That's a long time. How did you first meet the defendants?" Captain Hayes replies, "At Northside High School, there were a few altercations in which the defendants were involved." Thinking he now has Captain Hayes cornered, Mr. Savage asks, "So, the defendants have a history of physical altercations?" Captain Hayes firmly replies, "No. The defendants have a history of putting an end to physical altercations started by others." Learning some inside information from Chucky's mother, Catherine Black, Mr. Savage asks Captain Hayes, "Do you, Captain Hayes, periodically visit Eddie's service station, the service station owned and operated by Edward Boganskaya?" Captain Hayes replies, "Yes." Mr. Savage instructs Eddie, "Please tell the court how often you visit Eddie's service station." Captain Hayes replies, 1 to 3 times a week, on average. Sometimes more, sometimes less." Mr. Savage asks, "Would you consider your frequency of visits to Eddie's service station more or less than average when compared with other establishments?" With no hesitation, Captain Hayes replies, "Oh, it's definitely way above average." Hoping to prove a conspiracy of sorts, Mr. Savage walks around the courtroom, holding up a folder of irrelevant documents, and instructs Captain Hayes, "Please explain to the court why you visit Eddie's service station 4 to 12 times a month, which you, yourself, consider to be way above average compared with other establishments in the area." Captain Hayes responds, "I'd love to. First, I periodically drop off a printout of stolen and wanted vehicles. So, if a stolen vehicle comes into the service station, we can be notified. Second, Edward Boganskaya and Robert Bradshaw have close ties to Northside High School. They are a goldmine of information about what goes on there and around the community. Third, I buy my gas at Eddie's service station. Fourth, Eddie gets great bagels and coffee delivered. Shall I go on?" Mr. Savage replies, "No. I think I get the picture." Trying to put together his line of questioning on the fly, Mr. Savage pauses. Truth is, Mr. Savage has no idea what to ask Captain Hayes next. Getting impatient with the delay, The judge tells Mr. Savage, "Please proceed, counselor. We don't have all day." Pretending to search for a document in his folder, Mr. Savage replies, "Yes, Your Honor. I understand." Mr. Rice whispers to Mr. Davies, "He's stuck in the mud." Mr. Davies whispers back, "I see that." Mr. Savage asks, "Is it safe to say, Captain Hayes, that you are friends with the defendants?" Captain Hayes replies, "In a way, yes. The defendants are certainly not my adversaries." Trying to prove some sort of collusion, Mr. Savage asks, "Do you believe that your testimony here today is skewed toward the defendants?" Taking control of the courtroom, Captain Hayes firmly replies, "Let's get something straight. My testimony is based upon what we call facts, evidence, and the law. I have a duty to uphold the law, and that is exactly what I am doing. My testimony is skewed toward presenting the evidence as the department sees it, not how you see it." Not liking being reprimanded, Mr. Savage asks Captain Hayes, "Do you believe, sir, that Charles Black was mistreated by law enforcement officials, even in the least bit, specifically, in the sense that Mr. Black's complaints were routinely just shoved under the carpet?" Captain Hayes replies, "This Charles Black character was not mistreated in any way. And, yes, some of his complaints were justifiably shoved under the carpet." Repeating Captain Hayes' words, Mr. Savage sarcastically orates, "This Charles Black character. A character. I see." Thinking he has the captain trapped, Mr. Savage asks, "Will you please give the court one or two examples of how the police department shoved Mr. Black's complaints under the carpet?" Reviewing both his notes and Chucky's rap sheet, Captain Hayes replies, "On July 17th of last year, Charles Black asked that an officer come to his house. On that date, Charles Black's complaint was that aliens have landed in his backyard and are sending coded messages using some sort of Morse code. It turns out that the perpetrator was a woodpecker. 2 days later, he called the department with the same complaint, demanding that something be done about it. We shoved that complaint under the carpet and sent animal control out to deal with him. I tell you, this character is a real piece of work." Laughter breaks out in the courtroom, prompting the judge to strike his gavel. Wanting to demonstrate the bias of the county police department, Mr. Savage informs Captain Hayes, "Charles Black has filed several complaints against Officer Axel Braden, who is employed as a law enforcement official at the State University. Has your department looked into those complaints, or have you brushed those complaints under the carpet too?" Mr. Davies or Mr. Rice could object to Mr. Savage's line of questioning, but choose not to, if only to hear some free entertainment. Captain Hayes, reviewing his notes, replies, "According to the department's records, Charles Black has filed two complaints against Officer Braden. In his first complaint, this Charles Black character alleges that Officer Braden installed an antenna in his backyard and is beaming mind control radio signals into Charles Black's house. In his second complaint, Charles Black claims Officer Braden looks at his house. Honestly, it's hard to take those complaints seriously." Mr. Savage, not very skilled in trial law, has repeatedly violated the first unwritten rule of questioning a witness. That rule is to never ask a question that you do not know the answer to. But, as Mr. Davies and Mr. Rice suspected, Mr. Savage is only present in court today to collect a paycheck. Realizing that he is digging himself into a deeper hole, Mr. Savage announces, "I don't have any further questions for this witness, Your Honor." The judge tells Captain Hayes, "You may step down, Captain Hayes." The judge then tells Mr. Rice, "You may call your next witness, Counselor." Unexpectedly, Mr. Davies announces, "The defense would like to call Officer Axel Braden to the stand." Officer Braden, not really expecting to testify today, is wondering why he is being called as a witness. Officer Braden takes the stand and is informed that, as an officer of the law, he is already sworn in. Braden answers a few preliminary questions, and to the amazement of the tribe, Braden uses proper English. Mr. Davies, who was not expecting to question Officer Braden today, asks, "Officer Braden, am I correct that you live across the street from the plaintiff?" Braden replies, "That is correct. I live diagonally across the street from Charles Black." Purely to irritate Mr. Savage, Mr. Davies asks Braden, "How would you characterize the plaintiff?" As expected, Mr. Savage exclaims, "I object, Your Honor." Without hearing the justification for the objection, the judge replies, "Overruled, Counselor. The witness will please answer the question." Braden replies, "Charles Black has a screw loose. That guy is seriously crazy." Moving on to the one subject for which he called Braden to the stand, Mr. Davies asks, "Please describe to the court the antenna tower located in your backyard." Braden replies, "The tower is 50 feet high. On the tower, I have three antennas. One antenna is for my shortwave radio. Another antenna is for my police scanner. The third one is a television antenna." Elaborating further, Braden describes, "The television antenna can pick up television stations far away. So, when there's a local football blackout, I can still see the game." Mr. Davies asks, "Do you transmit any signals from that tower?" Braden replies, "No, sir. I only receive signals. I don't transmit anything at all." Mr. Davies asks Officer Braden, "Officer Braden, do you look at Charles Black's house more than, say, any of the neighbors' houses?" Braden replies, "Yes, I do." Mr. Davies asks, "Would you please explain to the court why you look at the plaintiff's house more than the neighboring houses?" Braden replies, "There were several instances when someone shot at my house. Once, someone shot at my house with a BB gun. Then, someone shot at my house with a 45 caliber gun. The trajectory was from Charles Black's front yard. And once I caught the plaintiff in my pool late at night with one of his friends." Expecting an objection from Mr. Savage, Mr. Davies asks, "Do you believe the plaintiff represents a threat to your family?" No objection, however, comes. In a military tone, Braden confidently replies, "Yes, sir." Mr. Davies announces, "I have no further questions for this witness, Your Honor." The judge tells Mr. Savage, "Your witness, Counselor." Shrugging off the witness, Mr. Savage replies, "I have no questions for this witness, Your Honor." The judge tells Officer Braden, "You may step down, Officer Braden." The judge then tells Mr. Davies, "You may call your next witness, Counselor." Speaking for the defense team, Mr. Rice informs the judge, "The defense rests, Your Honor." The attorneys present their closing arguments, and the jury is given instructions by the judge and sent to the jury room to deliberate the case. The bailiff informs those present that the court will be in recess until such time that the jury returns with a verdict. Mr. Davies and Mr. Rice are quite confident that they will win the case. Mr. Savage is now quite confident that Chucky doesn't stand a chance of winning. But Mr. Savage has already made his money, and a lot of it at that. 20 minutes later, the jury returns to the courtroom with a verdict, which is definitely not good news for one of the parties. Hearing the news that the jury has returned, those in the hallway quickly return to the courtroom. The bailiff announces, "All rise." All attendees stand as the bailiff proclaims, "Hear ye, hear ye. This court is again in session." The judge takes his seat at the bench and strikes his gavel, glad this trial is nearly over with. The judge asks, "Has the jury come to a verdict?" The foreman replies, "We have, Your Honor." Walking over to the foreman, the clerk obtains the verdict form. The clerk hands the verdict to the judge, who tries to conceal his laughter. The judge hands the verdict back to the clerk. Reading the verdict, the clerk proclaims, "In the case of Charles Black versus Edward Boganskaya, Katerina Boganskaya, Mark Svoboda, and Paula Svoboda, the jury finds the defendants not guilty on all charges brought against them. The jury also found it proper to award the defendants their attorney's fees." Hearing his verdict, Chucky yells out, "They were lying. They were all lying. Can't anyone see it?" Mr. Savage tells Chucky in a strong whisper, "The judge has not dismissed us yet. He can still cite you for contempt of court." Fortunately, for Chucky, the judge lets Chucky's outburst pass. Expression of emotion is common after the verdict is delivered. Truth is, the judge doesn't want to be bothered with this trial any longer, and does not want to stay around any longer than necessary. And the last thing the judge wants to do today is work overtime dealing with a nut job, to use Captain Hayes' terminology. Once the trial is over, Mark asks Eddie loud enough for Chucky to hear, "When are you going to have the new time machine finished?" Eddie replies, "I'm still waiting for the new Catarinium crystals to be cut. Then, we can transport people around the world without us actually being present." Kathy tells Mark, "The new crystals should be cut and ready to go by the end of the month." Chucky looks over at Eddie, who quickly mentions, "We'd better watch what we say." The Chucky is listening to us. Not surprisingly, Chucky looks very worried. Interrupting Eddie's conversation, a person yelling out exclaims, "Edward Boganskaya, you should be ashamed of yourself. I don't know how you can live with yourself." Eddie turns around, seeing Mrs. Black hobbling down the aisle. Eddie ignores Mrs. Black's ranting and continues his conversation with those at the defendant's table. Coming up from behind Eddie, Mrs. Black starts hammering Eddie's back with her fist, yelling out, "Edward Boganskaya, this time you have gone way too far." Quickly restrained by Officer Erica Bradshaw, Mrs. Black is turned over to the officer stationed in the courtroom. Mark exclaims, "Wow. What a shit fit. That whole family is crazy." Wasting no time placing Mrs. Black in handcuffs, the officer escorts Mrs. Black out of the courtroom. Mr. Rice mentions, "I suppose she'll be spending a few nights in jail." Kathy asks, "Really?" Mr. Rice replies, "Certainly. There is absolutely no tolerance for that type of behavior in a courtroom. She'll spend at least one night in jail." Paula comments, "That's just too bad." Not. Chucky and Mr. Savage are escorted to the bailiff's desk, where some paperwork is executed. Specifically, Chucky is notified of his options of how to pay for the defendant's court fees. Ticked off that he had paid Mr. Savage a huge sum of money to bring charges against Eddie, Kathy, Mark, and Paula, Chucky is doubly ticked off that he now has to pay Eddie to cover Mr. Davies and Mr. Rice's bill. But that's the way the pickle squirts, right into Chucky's eye. Kathy asks, "Now that the circus is over, now what?" Paula replies, "Do you have to ask, girl?" Paula and Kathy exchange a high five and exclaim in unison, "Pizza." Braden and Erica join them as they get ready to leave the courtroom and head to the pizzeria for a mid-afternoon snack. As they pass by the bailiff's table where Chucky is completing his post-trial paperwork, Kathy asks the group, "Are we going to ask the Chucky to go with us?" Mark replies, "No. The Chucky doesn't want to be our friend." Paula adds, "Yeah. And besides, our friends don't glow orange in the middle of the night and croak like a frog when they talk like the Chucky does." Vividly recalling that Mark and Paula used those identical two phrases when they were in Chucky's front yard on Saturday, July 20th, Chucky hammers his fist on the table and exclaims, "They did it. I know they did. See? They have a time machine and they are after me." The group leaves, leaving the bailiff and Mr. Savage to calm Chucky down. Chucky, recalling the video presented during the trial, is now questioning his own sanity. After signing the requisite paperwork, Chucky has a massive breakdown and shit fit, and has to be transported to the state mental institution on Central Avenue. Mr. Savage, the crook that he is, heads home, making a huge sum of money for representing Chucky, whom he should have advised that he does not have a case.